am going to change this though. Remember, Mary Templeton Gates is being interviewed today as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League. This is April the 7th, 2004, being recorded in San Antonio, Texas at the Army Residence Community. Ruth Stewart is interviewing. Mary, could you go on and start by telling us where you were born and grew up and a little bit about your younger life?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I was born in Julesburg, Colorado on the 28th of January, 1914. I was the first of three children. When I was about 10, my parents moved to Ohio because my grandfather had died and my father had to be there with him. Both my grandfather and father were doctors. From Ohio, we stayed there several years and then moved to Georgia because of my father's health. He was very sick at that time and could do very little. In Georgia, we children grew up and loved it. It was a very nice place to grow. We lived in several little communities there. Ellerslie, Georgia, on the western side of Georgia, and then down right on the border between Georgia and Florida. And that's where I went to school primarily, through high school. And it was from there that I went to nurse's training in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Grady Hospital.
That's a historic place for sure. How did you get interested in nursing?
Because my father was a doctor. My mother had planned to be a doctor, but she got married, and that I came along and a few things like that, and she never got back to doing that. It's my pause, you know. She was a marvelous woman. And after my father got so sick that he couldn't work, she taught school. And that was what we lived on when I was in grade and high school in Georgia. There was no money for me to go to college, just absolutely none. So I decided that I would be an RN rather than just get married. I looked over the different hospitals that I knew of there in Georgia and decided on Grady Hospital because it was a big hospital in a big city, and I thought it would be interesting. It was the very good reason for going. I graduated from Grady Hospital in 1938 and took a short, very temporary job at Brunswick, Georgia. While I decided on what I was going to do, I knew I wanted to go to college. So I looked over the places that I could go that would help me go to college and go to work too, because I had to work. I decided on New York City. The other one was I've forgotten the name of it, but New York City was the best. I went up there and thoroughly loved New York, loved my job there, and I went to Teachers College, which is part of Columbia University, while I was there. My first job, which I got from writing in to jobs available from a small nursing magazine, was at St. John's Hospital on Herkimer Street in Brooklyn, New York. It was an Episcopal hospital, and I'm an Episcopalian, which just was incidental. I liked it. I stayed there for about a year, I guess. And at that time, I was commuting to Teachers College. It was an hour's ride both ways. On top of working, that was rather long. So after about a year, I decided I might find something closer. I answered another advertisement and interviewed a lady doctor for Inwood House, which was a home for unmarried girls. She took me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This, incidentally, Inwood House is on 15th Street, right in the center of town, and it was nice for that reason, for us, for young people. I enjoyed that work. The doctor gave me quite a bit of extra work to do there, and it was nice.
What kind of things did you do with the girls?
Oh.
Or the young women, I should call them, I guess.
Yes. We took care of them before and after delivery, and we took them to hospitals, different hospitals, to deliver. We went by taxi, and always gave the taxis a good tip so they would be glad to come back. It was rather interesting, and when the Prince of Wales and his wife came to New York, she came to see us, and I have pictures of that, while he went to see some of the people and the men there in New York. And it was rather interesting, that reason. But after several years of that, working at Inwood House, I decided I'd like to take a postgraduate. I enjoyed surgery and obstetrics, and decided on obstetrics because you had patient contact, which you did not have with surgery patients. I went to New York Hospital for my postgraduate in obstetrics, and about that time, the war is going pretty good. I was told at first no, that I was not to go to war, that I was needed there. I was a Red Cross nurse, but they thought I should stay there. I decided I had to go to the service. So I went down to the enlistment area and joined the Army. Told them that I would be ready to go about mid-January. And I took my oath of office on 8 February 1943. I had asked if I could stay in Fourth Army because I liked New York. They said no, they weren't filling any spots right there in New York, but they thought if I would like to write Washington, they'd probably fill it, let me stay. I asked them what spots they were filling at this time, and they said Gulfport, Mississippi. I looked it up overnight. It was a winter resort, fishing, hunting, swimming, what have you. I called up and said, you may send me there. That's fine. So I went to Gulfport, Mississippi. It was a new base. It had just, and it was an Army Air Base, not an Air Force base. And I reported there on 8 February. It was a nice base. Most of the had just been activated, and they were still getting a lot of their personnel in. I went on duty the first day after being given my clothing and so forth that you do in the service, or you did in those days. And the next day I went on duty. I was struggling to see what I was supposed to do, as everyone does when they're new in the place. And this great big man, blonde fella, came in, and I was at the desk, and I stood up for him because I saw he was a doctor, and he started asking me questions sitting on my desk. And some of the questions I thought were very personal, but I answered him primarily because I was new. Otherwise, I might not have.
You didn't know any better.
That's right. I might have told him it was none of his business otherwise, but I answered very, very nicely. When I went off duty that night, I found a little note on my bed asking me to go see the chief nurse. I went to her place, and she said, "You saw Dr. Schrader today." I said, "I saw a lot of doctors. Which one was he?" And she said, "Big blonde." And I said, "Yes, I saw him." And he says, "Well," she said, "well, he is chief of surgery, and he wants you as his surgery supervisor, so that is what you will do tomorrow." She said, "By the way, you will wear a band and a half on your cap." Now, I don't know whether people knew, except the old ones, that when we were in whites then, we had army caps, and on them, if you were someone of designated different than just a ward nurse, you had a band or maybe two bands on your hat. The chief nurse wore two bands. Her assistant wore a band and a hat. I was the third one, and I wore a band in my hat. I told her I couldn't do it because I didn't have the bands. She said, "I can do that." So she gave me one of her full bands, and she called her assistant and asked for one of her thinner bands. Narrow.
The half was the width, not
width,
the length.
Yes.
Okay.
And they go over the white cap. So in fear and trembling the next day, I went to surgery. Everything was fine. We had a good surgery. They liked me. My staff liked me. And we had a group of doctors from Charity Hospital in New Orleans. They were tremendous. It was excellent work. We had people that, the work we did was outstanding. And I was able to judge that because of my different places I've been.
Tell me, what kind of patients were you getting in casualties from
the
war?
Oh yes, we were getting war casualties. Uh-huh. In fact,
for the surgical care,
orthopedics were told to operate on the orthopedics when they had to amputate in two sections rather than one, because some of them had trouble. Not our man. He said, "That's just making the patient go through trouble twice." He said, "I'll do it the way it is." He said, "I'll do it my way, and that is one time." So when Washington came down to inspect us, we stuck all of those patients in a ward in the back so that they wouldn't see it. And they asked about them. So we showed them, the doctors did, showed the patient, and they okayed his work and told him he could continue doing it the way he wanted. I was, about that time, we sent a few people overseas, and both nurses and men wrote back saying that they needed more training. They needed to be able to suture and to do IVs and things like this. So this doctor said to me, okay, you and I'll train our people. So we started, except you and I meant me. He was busy. And I had classes, first in the technicians. And at that time, the nurses were pretty good. They didn't ask for any help. Technicians were, they were gluttons. They wanted to do anything and everything. Let turn them loose, you know. So everybody was happy for a while. And then I noticed that some of the nurses looked long-faced. And I said, what's wrong with you? They said, well, if a tech should be able to close a patient, why shouldn't we? Closing means doing the last sutures on an operation. And I said, okay, you can. So I taught them. And after that, the doctors were assisted very well. We did send quite a few people overseas. I was fortunate. They liked my work, so that in 1 year, they put me in for first lieutenant, and I made it. Our chief nurse was a first lieutenant. She'd been in the service many years. They all knew that I wanted to go to flight school. That was my reason for going in. I had been asked to join Presbyterian in New York, and I refused simply because I wanted to be a loner and go to flight school. So in my second year there, there was an opening, and I took the physical for flight nursing and passed it and was sent to Bowman Field in Kentucky to flight school. There were four of us who were first lieutenants at that school at the time, and we were very peculiar in that one day we were told that we were just students and we had no rank at all. And the next day they said, you are going to have to take a squadron overseas, so your first lieutenant, your chief nurse. That was a chief nurse in those days. Well, after we finished I graduated from Bowman Field, this school was ordered to Randolph Air Force Base in San Antonio. And they asked me to stay with the school and teach. And I told them I didn't want to, but about that time I had a bad back. My back went out and I was rather crippled for a while. So I had to stay with school. I brought the school down. I came with the school down to
Randolph. Now, Randolph was still Army at that point, wasn't it?
Oh, we're all Army.
Yeah, it was later. Okay.
Yeah. It was the difference between Army Air Force and Army. Army ground, I guess you'd call it. So we came down to Randolph. And at Randolph, I kept asking for a squadron. And so they gave me the next one. And I took the 831st Squadron out of Randolph to the Pacific. I don't remember the time. It was in the second year we activated the squadron at Randolph. And because I was the chief nurse of the squadron at that time, I made another promotion and was captain in my second year, which was unheard of. Just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
I guess.
So we went to the Pacific, took a train out of Randolph. Right outside the gate, there was a train waiting for us. And we got on it and went up to San Francisco And in San Francisco at Hamilton Field, we flew to Hickam Field in Hawaii. I was told when I got there that I would go, that the squadrons were all being split up to a certain extent, and that I was going to be chief nurse of the Guam section, at Guam, the island of Guam, as soon as it could be built. At the present moment, it was not an island. They had just taken it over from the Japs. In fact, at a party one night, a General Harmon asked me if I would like to go down and see where my nurse's quarters would be. I could pick out a place for it. And I told him no, because I had something else I had to do, which is not what you ask to tell a general. But in this case, it was very good, because when he went down there, his plane was lost. And it looked like I was not supposed to be killed at that time. We never did find him. Mm-hmm. However, the field at Guam was named Harmon Field, and that is the lower field that was closed later on when they had a field that went up over the hills. It was a little easier for pilots to fly in and out of. So I went to Guam. Thoroughly enjoyed it. We were kept in a cantonment type there, even from our soldiers. We had to have barbed wire around the
the nurses, mm-hmm. because they were female.
We were female, and they were protecting us. And we could not go off base without there be two men. But with two men, you could go. And there was a nice swimming area not too far from the base that we went to. The Navy headquarters were there, as was the 20th Air Force. And it was a good station.
What was your living like in the cantonment?
We had 8-man square tents with a wooden platform. Almost immediately after that, we were given Quonset huts. They were very nice. They kept the heat out. No. After the tents, we went into prefabs, and they were not so good because there was no insulation. And very often, if we weren't flying that day and just had to stay on base, we would crawl under the house because it was on a hill. And we would play cards under the house, because that was it.
Got some air there.
And then we got the Quonsets, and they were nice.
And your food, what was it like?
It was bad. Really, it was. We went to the mess hall, and they did as well as they could, but in a hot area, it was hard. I don't think many of us complained. I know that they would give us I think we were able to have 5 Cokes a week per nurse. And they gave us some for transients that would come through, because I had transit group also that billeted with us. And if they took more than 2 in a night, we were very unhappy with them. But we couldn't complain. We didn't complain about the food. And
Was it cooked by local people or by GIs?
GIs, all of GIs. And if we wanted to, we could cook little things in our quarters because they gave us lovely quarters. When we got into the closets, we had a kitchen, and we could cook some things, not too much, but a little bit. And we were in and out so much. From Guam, it was like spreading a fingers. You went in so many different places.
And this was evacuating patients. Tell
right.
me a little bit about that.
We flew in the B-54, which is a 4-engine plane that had to have extra gas tanks put in between the pilot's compartment and the patient's compartment in the back. They were always used as cargo planes going into a combat area. Anywhere from the States on, they had cargo along or people traveling. We were able to sling litters in the plane, 4 deep, and those were the patients going out back to the States. It was a long haul. It was always harder and longer to go to the States than it was coming from. But it wasn't too bad.
So would you fly from Guam to these other locations?
We would fly from Guam to Kwajalein. Well, we would fly, it depends on, from Guam, we went down under. Then we came back to Guam. And the theory was that a new person would take over at Guam and take the plane on in. The crew was changed also. The next stopover was Kwajalein, and the crews were changed there. The next stop was Hickam, and then the States. And Hickam to the States was the longest trip.
But the patients stayed on the same plane?
Not always. Sometimes the patients would, if they had been, depending on the type of patient, if they had been there a long time and needed help, you could offload them and put another patient on. Or if that patient was doing well, you would put him on the plane and let them go on. And at Hickam, most of the time, patients were changed, and there was a new roster made for the plane there. It was good. You had a nurse and 2 techs, and you had a group of very sick patients most of the time, so that you worked very hard on the way back. Going down, we were able to rest, and it was very, we always were happy when we could be on a cargo plane, because on that one we could find a place on the floor, put your pillow, put your purse down for a pillow and rest. If you were in a troop plane going down, it was loaded with patients, with the people, GIs and what have you, and sitting there for any length of time was difficult because your feet swelled and you didn't dare take off your shoes because you couldn't get them back on, things like that. But it was all right. We were all young, and this was one of the things, couldn't do it now, but in those days you could. I guess that's it.
That would be a very interesting experience, but also very heartrending.
It was. I'm telling you, some of them, we had some very sick patients. I never lost a patient. And We had a couple. The ones that gave us the most trouble were the psychotic patients. I had one I got from Japan, and he was so wild. He was a manic depressed in the manic stage, and I said, I can't take him. He was so wild. So the doctor gave him a heavy dose of medicine. And then I said, well, I can't take him. I'm not sure he's going to live. But he came out of the medicine, and so I took him. And we had to go from Japan to Okinawa, that stage, and then from Okinawa to Guam, because of weather. And en route, this man, whom we had strapped down, and I had strapped with it, the technicians, down on a litter, broke the straps and started up. So I called my tech and said, so-and-so, come here, we're in trouble. And I landed on the patient with my knees, because he was trying to get up. So he bit me on my leg. It wasn't funny at the time, but it was later on. From Guam on, he was in a depressed stage, no problems. I shouldn't have taken him. I should have had them keep him, but I didn't. Didn't know enough. Let's see.
So then how long were you in Guam and doing that?
I was there until the war ended.
Okay.
And then I came back to the States, and I went to Washington to see whether I wanted to stay in or whether I wanted to go out and be be civilian. They offered me Bermuda as a job. So I accepted and went to Bermuda. It was a good duty station.
It was a hospital there.
Yes, it was a hospital.
And
what? It was a beautiful hospital that they had built with sand from the beach that had salt in it, so that it was falling apart. But there were parts of it that we could use, which we did. And we didn't have the staff, the number of patients asked for that they had before. As far as station was concerned, you couldn't ask for nicer. We had the beaches, Hamilton. Our commanding officer of the base had his own ship, I think about 30 footer, a boat, not a ship, and we'd go out and play bridge on it and things like that. It was a nice station. It was difficult in that we didn't have a lot of staff, and we were very often on 12-hour duty round the clock, but it worked out.
Were most of these just people that were stationed there that you were taking care of?
They were this group from the CO, yes.
You didn't have still war casualties?
No,
there at all.
At then. It was all the base and people coming through. Not too many came through because most of the planes in and out of Europe went the northern route through Newfoundland, which I did later. We had one interesting patient while I was in Bermuda. A lady who you couldn't see was pregnant, lost her baby. And they just thought it was a stillborn. So all of a sudden, during the night, the nurse said, baby started mewing. So we had this baby the next morning handed to us that you could put in a cigar box, about like this, and shut the door. And we had nothing, absolutely nothing. So she had taken a pasteboard box and put hot water bottles around it. Engineering made us a hot incubator for the baby with lights underneath to turn it and regulate the heat. And we used a medicine dropper with a rubber tip on it for feeding. We put a 4x4 under him for a diaper. We didn't try to wrap it on him. And we watched him because his little respiration wasn't developing. You had to watch him to stimulate him if he stopped breathing. We sent him home. This was her first baby. We sent him home at 5 pounds after she had been with us for 1 week in the hospital taking care of that baby. Because after we had worked as hard as we did, we insisted that she know how to take care of her baby. And she did. She said, and he was spoiled rotten because he would be crying and you would be coming toward he was right down back of the nurse's station. You'd be coming toward the nurse's station and he'd stop crying. Then if you walked on by, he'd start again. And she said that when she got him home, that she had to put him where he could see her because he wanted to see what she was doing. But that was the only really interesting patient we had. Others were somewhat normal. I've often wondered what ever happened to that baby, but I know he was a good one.
Yeah. I don't bet you wondered about that. You had a lot invested in him.
We did. Oh, we were on 12-hour duty just standing there watching him breathe and then being ready for something.
Yeah.
From Bermuda, they sent me back. I was off flying status then, you know. I went back to Westover Field.
Where is Westover?
It's in Springfield, Massachusetts, and it is our big overseas for the European base at that time, and it was. And we were flying a number of flights out of Westover Field.
Back on flight status.
Back on flight status and loving it. Our big flight was to Europe. We went into Germany, Rhein-Main, Germany, and most of the time, and then a smaller plane would take patients in to Rhein-Main. The next longest flight was down the southern route through Georgia and Mobile and San Antonio up to Hamilton Field and around Robin that way, going through the south. And the other was small 47 planes that would pick up patients from different bases in the States. We were busy because it was action all the time. And of course, we enjoyed the European flight very much, but we liked the others also. From Westover Field, they decided that they were going to have a flight in Georgia. So I was sent with 6 nurses and around 15 men for a little flight there at Warner Robins, Georgia, picking up patients along the route there and having them ready for the big plane coming in. This was good. I enjoyed it. Then I went off flying status again and went to Hunter Air Force, Porter Air Force Base, I guess you call it, or field, in Savannah, Georgia. That was interesting. I enjoyed Savannah. I didn't get to stay there very long. They decided, Washington did, that some of their older nurses, I guess I was considered an older nurse by then, needed to have some general hospital training. So they put me on to the Army. We're still all Army. Well, no, we're not. Up here somewhere, when I was in West Overfield, I went Air Force before Warner Roberts. I was flying at the time, so I decided I'd...
You had to initiate a change, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, and we took a physical, and they tested us and what have you. And surprisingly enough, two of the girls there did not make it. I've often wondered why they didn't. Anyway, we were Air Force at that time, but Hunter, I went to the general hospital that the Army had then in Athens, Georgia, and I loved it. I hadn't been in a big hospital since I'd left training. Well, no, since I'd left New York, because I took New York Hospital, OB. And that was a big hospital. I thought that the general hospitals were delightful. And the chief nurse at the hospital there, Athens, told me that if I would come back to the Army, she'd see I got a promotion. She said, we like you. We'd like to have you Army. But at that time, Korea broke, and I was given 24 hours to report on flying status again to Brookley Air Force Base in Mobile, Alabama.
What does it mean to go back and forth from flight status to non-flight status? Is it paperwork mainly?
Mostly, just paper. Mm-hmm. I suppose they would look at you if there was anything wrong with you, but there wasn't anything obviously wrong. And and they knew I liked it, and I guess I gave satisfaction. Mm-hmm. The pilots liked to fly with me and all that. Mm-hmm. And I like to fly with them. I'll tell you something later if you want on that. So from Brooklyn in Mobile, I was grounded again and sent to Craig Air Force Base in Alabama, Selma, Alabama. There I met a man and married him. And that's where the gates came in.
Mm-hmm. And did that mean the end of your Air Force career?
No, no. I thought it would because I intended to have children, but they didn't come. So, as long as about that time, just about the time we got married and a nice house on base and everything like that, and we took a 30-day leave, they sent him overseas to a remote assignment out of Alaska. And so since I couldn't go anyway, it was just one of those things where we were separated. And when he came back to the States, they moved both of us to Reese Air Force Base in Texas. Reese, R-W-E-S-E. That's at Lubbock, Texas. We're getting to the end. He had a heart attack there, and the doctor said that if he didn't retire, which he did not want to do, he was going to die because the tension and all of work would be something that he couldn't stand. So they alerted me about then that I was ready for an overseas assignment, and I asked him for 6 months to get my husband retired, which they gave me. At the end of 6 months, I had orders to the Philippines, and I enjoyed that. It was a good station. At that time, we were friendly with the Filipino. There was no problems with fighting, anything like that. The Filipino would steal you blind if they could, but aside from that, everything was all right. So, my husband didn't care for the Philippines, though. He was a civilian by then, and he really had a nice time of it because he'd go down to operations. Aside from that, everything was all right. So, my husband didn't care for the Philippines, though. He was a civilian by then. And he really had a nice time of it because he'd go down to operations and they'd take him in where they were going. And that wasn't enough after he saw all of the East Asia. He decided to go to Australia. So he took money and a round trip ticket and went to Australia. It took him about 3 months to go broke. And then he came home again. He also left the Philippines before I did, came home, visited all of his relatives, all of mine relatives, all of our friends, and when I came home, he said, well, we can go to your next duty station. I've seen everybody. We went to a lot of people. Anyway, I was reassigned from the Philippines to Bergstrom Austin, Texas. Oh, I forgot to say that at Craig Air Base, there in about 53, no, it'd be 51, I guess, I made major. And at Bergstrom, out of a clear sky, they made me an LC. I wasn't very happy with that because I knew it would mean a move. Bergstrom was too small for.
What year was that?
This was about, let's see. Probably about 59 or early 60s,
okay,
that I made out to. They ordered all of us down to headquarters, and I was very quiet, and somebody said, why are you so quiet? I said, I don't think I like what's happening. And they said, why? And I said, it's a promotion. And they said, yes, it was. But it was nice to have it. And from there, I was fortunate in that two men asked for me, the commanding officer at Wilford Hall and the one at Carswell. Both asked for me, and Wilford Hall got me. So I stayed at Wilford Hall for about 2 years. By that time, my husband was telling everybody I'd retire, or he'd divorce me, so I retired.
And that was in
63.
1963, so you retired.
Mm-hmm.
Then Was that the point at which you moved in here? No, because
no.
That was quite a few years later.
Oh, yes. He wanted to travel. He was a little bit... He liked things, and then he
lose interest?
Yes.
Okay. I understand those people.
They do. So, he, by that time, when we were at Bergstrom, he bought 5 acres of land on Lake Travis and built a home. After he got the house built, he found out that there were no telephones out there, and I'm in a sack base that has to have a telephone. They made it. They got me a phone out there so that I had, from walking across the street to go to work, I had 20 miles of driving every day. Winding roads, too. But that was fine because he was happy at Lake Travis. By the time I retired, he was ready to travel. So, and we could not travel with a home on Lake Travis. It was impossible. It was too much vandalism, what have you. So, we sold a house at Lake Travis and bought a home in Austin. And I insisted on that to have a base. And we traveled. We had a very good time traveling to Mexico part of the time and all over Canada in the summer. In the States too, coming and going. Thoroughly loved. The last couple of years, he wasn't feeling so good. He had a bad heart, you know. So, a friend of ours told us about the Army Residence Community opening, and he said, well, I've been thinking about going down there just to be close, because he was being taken care of. Both of us were at Wolford Hall. So we came down here, and we checked the Air Force villages, both of them, and the USAA towers that were not built yet, but they had the plans and all, which he looked over. And then we came over to the Ark, and he fell in love with it. So... He wrote a check for $10,000 and said, come on, hon, we got to go home and put some money in the bank.
That's scary.
Well, no, it was from out of savings into checking. And we moved in here the day it opened. We could have moved a couple of days earlier, but we didn't know that, so we just waited till they moved in, till they let us. And we had moved in. He liked it. He lived 3 years.
Good.
And he enjoyed every minute of it. And that's it. I hope that other isn't on there. The last part.
Mary, did you get into any military groups or veterans groups after your retirement to the Army Residence Community?
I was, of course, a member of the Retired Officers Association. When we were in Austin, we were both members of the They had an active one, didn't get one here. Are you recording that? That's all.
Okay.
I mean the
retired
officers.
And the Women's Overseas Service.
Yes.
Okay.
I was too busy taking care of a man. By the time we moved here, he was not good again. Had a bad one.
Well, this has been a very interesting career that you've
I have enjoyed it thoroughly.
you really did enjoy your career in the Army and Air Force, and it was a rewarding one, obviously. And you obviously contributed a great deal throughout that.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, well, I thank you very, very much.
I wondered. I'd love to hear that.